Welcome back to Ball Year Round Podcast. As always, we got a Sunday story for you guys. This week, we were joined by Providence College walk-on, NCAA record holder, Big East tournament champion, and a childhood friend of mine, Ted Bancroft. So Teddy was kind enough to kind of go through his origin story and his rise to an eventual Big East champion and beyond. So we hope you guys enjoy the show. Teddy was real fun with it. Treated like a stand up a little bit. So we had a lot of fun with Ted. But yeah, if you guys like what you hear with today, go ahead and tell a friend and subscribe. And you can follow the pod on Twitter or Instagram at BYRP365. Andy, my co-host, is at AJRoshan22. And you can find me, Mike, at Lenny Biased. But yeah, enjoy the show. Guest today is an old friend of mine. He dominated the South Coast Conference at Bishop Stang, later walked on at Providence College, where he set the record for most minutes played as a walk-on in a single game with 45 minutes versus Penn State. And as a captain his senior year, his BC squad beat Doug McDermott's Creighton team to win the Big East tournament. So without further ado, Ted Bancroft, what's going on, man?
What's going on? Hey guys, thanks for having me. Been listening to the podcast a lot. You guys are crushing it. Just happy to be a guest here,
man.
Appreciate it. Thanks for coming on, Ted.
So you kind of had like a bit of a meteoric rise kind of halfway through your high school career there, which led to you eventually walking on to PC. Could you kind of walk us through what it was like to go from, not really a recruited or not really having necessarily like Division I college basketball on your radar to all of a sudden like having that kind of like confidence and that realization, like I might be able to do something with this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it starts like when I've always compared myself to a few people, and I think Anthony Davis is a good example, right? I grew up, my birthday is in August, so my parents had pushed me forward just because I was there intellectually, and that meant I was always small growing up. So I was always the youngest kid in every grade. So I started at about 5'5", didn't have armpit hair, which was a huge thing in high school until I was almost a senior. Right. So really was late maturing, but I played point guard my whole life until I think it was my junior year. One of my best friends at the time transferred to St. Andrews to play with guys like Michael Carter Williams, Ricky Lito. They actually had an elite team. I remember going to watch them. They were playing against, it was crazy. They were playing for like national championships, stuff like that. So at that point I was like an in-betweener, right? I had no idea what position I'd play. They kind of just tossed me around. And at the time, my point guard in high school was 5'7". So when I'm standing about 6 feet, I'm a forward on the team. So when Dave transferred, they threw me kind of in the post. So I was somewhat undersized. I still had kind of my career was as a point guard. So I still had the handle. So a lot of what we ran was kind of a flex offense where they would screen across from me. If I didn't get it, I'd get a top of the key and I could work out a little bit. So my junior year, I didn't play the first 10 games. After that, kind of had a few show outs where, again, flex offense. I'd try to post me, didn't work. I'd screen across, they'd screen down. Top of the key, I remember I hit like 4 threes in the first half. And it was kind of my coming out party, right? And coach started believing me, and we went on. That year, we had a pretty good team. We went to Medfield or Medford, I forget, and lost in the second round of the playoffs. And I was still playing kind of power forward center at the time at 6 foot. Then going into senior year, things kind of picked up a little bit differently where I talked to the coach and he could kind of see, hey, I grew again. I was still most of my senior year, I was around 6'2", and they put me on the wing again. So I was second tallest guy on my team, but I was playing the wing. And then I had a power forward, Harry Flynn, who was like 6'2" at the time, maybe 6'3". And then Pete Melanson, a younger kid, was growing into his body, about 6'2". So we had a decent sized squad, which allowed me to play on the wing. And through that process, I was still working in my body, right? I had mild athleticism in practice when it came to the games, different level of energy, you know, Mike, in high school, I missed 8 dunks, right? I was always trying to dunk on everybody. The body just wasn't following the confidence there. So going in, it was my second half senior year. I was starting to put up like consistent numbers, maybe 20 and 15 a game, which was, you know, it's not, I mean, we're playing in the South Coast Conference, so we're not getting Dukes, Kentuckys, but I was getting some looks at D2, D3. And at the time it was pretty cool going to see, my mom would take me on some of these visits to visit these schools and say, okay, hey, they're trying to peg you to say, come to, what was my first ever, Western New England College or something, Wenick, right? And she took me up there. I went to the Assumption Bentleys, some of those, which were all awesome. And at the end of my senior year, I remember having a conversation with my coach, and my family's a PC legacy, right? So my grandfather went there. My mother played college lacrosse there. My grandfather or my aunt and uncle all went to Providence. So growing up, I always wanted to go to Providence. And I went to him and said, Coach B, like, I want to play at Providence. I think you think I got a chance. And he was like, absolutely not. So I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. This is my varsity coach. And he was like, Teddy, you're 6'2". You may get to 6'3". You're too skinny. Like, I don't like your chances. If you want to play college basketball, you better make a selection of D2 or D3. And I talked to my mom, and as my hype beast, she obviously said, Teddy, you can do it for sure. Little did I know, she just wanted me to get a better degree. So she said, go to Providence. And I was fortunate because at the time I was super motivated. And when I got to college in August, again, I think I was 180 pounds. By the time of the tryouts in September or so, October, I think I'd already put on the freshman 15. So got to the tryouts, and it was an open tryout, which was awesome. And they start off with layup lines, which I couldn't believe. And I'm like, I'm in a D1 college basketball program and they're doing layup lines. Like, this can't be real. So obviously at that point, layup lines, I can dunk. So I'm doing dunks. I'm feeling good about myself. And then all we did was play 3-on-3 for 10 minutes. So I hit 2 or 3 threes, got another dunk. And then they're like, thank you guys. And then the team walked on the court and started practicing. So that was my tryout. And I remember calling my mom right after and was like, yeah, I have no idea how it went. I feel pretty good. You know, like, yeah. I missed one shot, but I did as well as I could have hoped. And I get a call while I'm on the phone with my mom, and it's the associate coach, Chris Davis, saying, Ted, we'd love you to come in to the locker room quick if you have a minute. So I was like, all right, done. So I go in the locker room, and at the time he was like, you know, I'm not saying you're on the team, but we would love for you to come practice with the players for the foreseeable future, and we'll see what happens. He was like, but if you know, if your grade slip or if you do anything wrong, you're done immediately. So I walk out of the office like, am I on the team, or kind of like, what's happening here? Right.
Are you
the
scout team?
Call my mom, tell her the story. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, am I a practice player? Who knows? So I get to the locker room the next day, and they have 2 jerseys, and one of them was a triple XL, number 35, and the other was an XL, and it was number 51. So I became number 51 by default. So first few months I practiced with the team, preseason, everything. And we could only dress a certain amount of players. So going into the first game, I was told I wasn't going to suit up. And obviously as a college kid, I'm on the team, quote unquote, I get invited to some parties. So I go out to party the night before the game and I show up on the bus with the stamp on my hand saying you're good to get in the club. And again, I'm thinking I'm sitting in the stands, no worries. So the coach, same coach that told me, if you mess anything up, you're off the team, calls me in the office and he goes, Keno, our head coach at the time, wants you to suit up today. And if I ever see that fucking mark on your hand again, you're off the team. So I suit up and it was actually, I couldn't at the time, cell phones were barely around. I think I just got an iPhone, probably not even, but I'm trying to text my parents saying like, I'm playing in the game or I'm on the bench tonight. Look for me. Doesn't even go through, nothing. So my parents didn't even know the first game. But I remember that was my first experience. And then from there, my freshman year was the most fun I had playing basketball. We had Keno Davis. He was the coach of the year at Drake. He won before he came over. I think I had him his third and final year at Providence, but he won coach of the year. Providence signed him. He just wasn't able to kind of translate to the Big East from what's Drake, Midwest or some conference out there.
Borderline Division. <No.
laughs> So my freshman year was the best because our practices were just scrimmages, right? He treated us like NBA players. So my body's developing. I'm finally getting to the point of like, he didn't care about defense or anything. He just said, shoot, have fun, play basketball. So my confidence skyrocketed and it got to the point, like I was talking shit to the starters and a few of the coaches had to pull me aside and say, hey, like, you can't be doing that. You can't talk to these guys because like, you're going to ruin their confidence and we need them to play. So you know, I was trying to maintain like where I'm play at. Exactly. Which is where my head was at. And they were like, I'm trying to just maintain this mentality. Everything's good. And it was at, we were playing, it was after, I'm trying to think of who we were playing. I think it was Syracuse. And I blocked Marshawn, which, again, Big East all-time leading scorer. And I said, get that shit out. And my leg got caught between his legs and dislocated my kneecap. Oof. So I'm like, I'm done. I had a good run. It was fun. In Keno Davis, 2 weeks after surgery, came over to me and he was like, hey, I want you to take this rehab seriously. And I was kind of like, I've only talked to you once in my life. This is pretty big that you're talking to me like this. And when I got to the weight room that day, the weight trainer, Coach White, said to me, he's like, Keno thinks you have a future here. So that was the first moment I'm like, wait a minute, I actually can play with these guys. I've got a chance, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it was towards the end of the season. So I get really diligent with my weightlifting, my rehab, everything. And then I want to say, man, what was it? Probably February, right after our last Big East game, Keno comes over to me and goes, hey, you know, I'd love to offer you a scholarship to be on the team next year as a basketball player, like an athletic scholarship. So I'm pumped, right? Obviously call my family. He got fired that day. And the joke always was, it was the last straw. He offered Ted Bancroft a scholarship. That was the last straw. So he, no joke, got fired that day. And I'm still in rehab. Like,
that's crazy.
I'm trying to figure out, like, do I have a scholarship? We're talking $60,000 worth of money right now. Like, yep. I'm all in on this. But so that was the end of the Keno era, which was the best. But I ended up coming into sophomore year rather than full scholarship, having no clue if I'd even be on the team anymore. Mm. So get to sophomore year, Coach Cooley comes in and I'm still rehabbing, and he came in and sent a message real early of the issue we had with Keno. There was no discipline. Dudes were just anyone could do whatever you wanted. There was like no rules. If you got in trouble for something, you'd miss practice because practice was so fun that it's like your punishment. You're not going to miss the game. We need you in the game, but you're not going to practice today. So if dudes skip class or anything, you would just miss practice. And then Cooley came in knowing like, hey, we've got to change the culture here. So day one, we go to workout, we lift, and he immediately says everyone to the baseline. And I'm still rehabbing, but I'm like, man, I'm not going to ruin my first impression with the new coach. I'll run a few sprints. Blow out my knee again.
What, and in the sprint?
In the sprint. I turn. Wow. The top half of my leg turns. The bottom half does not move. So my kneecap pops off again. What wasn't wearing my brace. So I was done. And I go to the trainer, and Cooley goes to the trainer later, and he was like, what the fuck is wrong with that kid? He can't even run a sprint. So this is not boding well for me. And I'm like, man, I'm coming off the idea of I almost just got a scholarship, et cetera. And what ended up happening was my parents raised me right. So I was a good kid, and like, I would hold the door. And Coach Cooley, it was my senior night, I found out during the speech when he said, I almost cut Ted that my first day meeting him. But he epitomized the culture that I wanted at Providence by holding the door, doing things the right way, that I ended up keeping him. So my whole career was almost done that first day meeting Ed Cooley, which is
that's like, crazy.
And honestly, it was crazy because it's like, I knew how to do things the right way. And like, I've got a great, my high school coach was like great basketball IQ. And like I watched basketball my whole life. So like my IQ was there. It was just like, in a good example, is Chris Dunn. When Chris joined the team, Cooley was a great recruiter. So Chris joined the team my junior year, and he got hurt, so we were on the scout team together, and we could read, we knew what the offense was going to do. And when I would make a steal, it would be my hand reaching out, tipping it forward. When he would make the same steal, the ball would hit him in the chest, or he'd be reaching back to get it. Like the change in speed, I'm like, I know what's going to happen, I'm getting there. But he would be so far ahead, just like, wow. The sprints, it was just, you could tell pretty clear, like, that's a different breed of athlete. And like, even on the Chris thing, while we're there, we would lift weights together. And like, I was his weightlifting partner for 2 years, and no joke, he would eat nothing but candy, and I would eat protein shakes, like lean meat, vegetables, everything. We would go to the gym. We start off, we'll call it 185 on bench press. Boom, we're both good. Next week, I'm eating lean meat, everything. He's having candy. He's up to 210. I'm at 195. I'm like, what is happening here? Like, so, he was just built differently.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But with just like the Cooley experience. So when he came in, the reason I got very lucky, because again, I did things the right way, right? And Keno hired kids that were just athletic. Like, you had guys like Gerard Coleman, some of the top players in the country at the time. But like, in regards to like diligence around basketball and playing defense and doing things the right way, they weren't there. So my sophomore year, I finally get back to practicing, playing, and it was pretty evident that, yeah, Ted's got a knee brace the size of who knows, like 325 pounds, but at least he knows where to be. Like, we used to do the shell drill. You remember the shell drill? Mm-hmm. I think the shell drill is taught to third graders.
That's recruiting camp.
Literally, we did that every day for like 2 months. Shell drill. Jeez. You go here. You go. Because a lot of my teammates were just like so naturally gifted that they never needed to think about defense. So we joined a defensive-minded coach, and I grew up in a system of like, hey, help the helper. You know the angles to play. Like, so when you're trying to build trust, you got to play the guys that know how to play the system. So before you know it, I'm almost cut. I'm slow still were never, in Cooley quote, "I'll never run a play for you, Ted." Never. He ended up running one that Penn State game. He ended up running a play for me. I didn't score, but but it got to the point of like, hey, this man's got to rebrand the college and transform the whole culture, which got me on the floor my sophomore year a ton, just because, hey, he would always say, "I know what I'm getting out of this guy," right? And like, he wasn't planning on winning that year. We ended up being okay, but like, he was planning for the future. And for me, it was a great opportunity to say like, hey, I figured it'd be one and done. This was my year to showcase, hey, I can play for the team. I'm good. Like, basically pat myself on the back, say I played college basketball. Okay, cool. Throw it on the resume. So my whole freshman year was really about like coolly disciplining the team, kids getting in trouble. The first day, every minute someone was late to class, it turned into a 22. So you got to go down, back. Yeah, in 22 seconds, right? Kadeem Batts missed. He was 40 minutes late to his first study hall. So we just got 40 22s. Dudes were puking everywhere. And it was like, it was a whole transformation of culture where we got to figure this out, because even going back prior to my year there, Keno Davis's team had like 8 kids arrested in 2 years span. So it was in a bad place, and Cooley came in and was like, hey, we need to shift the culture. And it was fortunate enough that I looked the part, right? At that time, I was finally 6'5", 230. I could shoot. I could play the part, and he could throw me out there outside of me wearing 51. He felt comfortable convincing people that I was a real college basketball player.
That's hilarious.
Like, how, as far as like mental, like all the mental stuff that goes into that, you know, you getting hurt, to going, you know, to getting that scholarship, guy gets fired that day. Then you're like, now you're thinking all these other thoughts, not sure what the heck's going to happen. And then, you know, re-blowing out your knee, and then you finally coming back. Like, kind of, what were you thinking that whole time before, you know, you got back on the floor? And, like, how did you keep yourself going?
It's crazy. And, like, if my family wasn't from Providence, I probably would have quit when I got hurt, right? Because it's one of those things of, I hit my dream for a little bit where I'm playing for Providence. Like, I always thought I could do more, and it was kind of teasing me, right? Like, Ted, you're right there. Get a scholarship. So when I got hurt, I was motivated to say, you're right there. You like, come back, impress this new coach, right? If this old coach who was coach of the year liked you, this guy coming from Fairfield, you got a way better chance. You know, like, that was one of the best coaches in the country. Now this guy, you can easily impress. And I also knew the team around me, I maintained a level of groundness where I knew I'd stay at Providence because of that was my academic career. And I knew I could sense like, hey, these guys are here for the basketball. So they've been talking about leaving, which gave me hope. And it ultimately came to fruition where I'm like, I could end up being one of the last 7 guys on this team. If I keep grinding, I can start seeing the floor a little bit. And like, if I start seeing the floor, that's when I can start showcasing, hey, I'm actually a decent basketball player. Like, I can hoop a little bit. So at the beginning, it was more of, hey, these are opportunities. You know, like, some people say never let a good crisis go to waste. And I was living in a crisis at the time. I saw coaching changes, culture changes. And all I could think about is like, my fundamentals are sound. My body was just hitting a point where it developed to a point where I can, hey, I can play with these guys. I can guard these guys. I never experienced, again, when I was 6'2 in high school, I was playing against centers who were 6'2, 6'3. Now you're telling me a shooting guard is 6'5 or Chris, a point guard at 6'5. I was just figuring out the next level of the game. So at that point, mentally, I'm kind of feeling like, all right, Ted, you're really playing basketball for kind of the first time in your life. Like, I don't have Mike Days covering me, and I just in and out crossover, you know, like I just finally got to a point where I'm like, all right, well, you're a sophomore, I'm 19, let's see what I can do here. And like, I committed to rehab that year, and was like very diligent on everything, thinking, again, I know kids are transferring, I know kids are struggling academically, I've got a shot. So for me, the first, my freshman to sophomore year, the transition was like super motivated. I just saw it as clear opportunity. The later in the career you get hurt again, things start getting a little bit darker. But the initial, hey, and I was still living off the high of like, I used to run around in my backyard thinking like, I'm Providence Friar, I'm Donnie McGrath, I'm Ryan Gomes. Like, I was at the games. Man, I got to send you this photo of me and when I met Ryan Gomes. I was almost in tears, right? Yeah. Just like, this is my idol. We came in, God Sham God. I don't know if you guys know him.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, God Sham God, man.
So, been working on that move for years.
But, yeah. First time I met Sham God, he walks in the locker room, and I'm like, oh, my God. And I knew him growing up. I'm like, that's God Sham God. He said, bro, can you throw on NBA TV? And I'm like, anything you want, of course. And he, at this point, he was just coming on as a grad assistant. So I put it on, and it's like Reggie Miller, maybe Stephen A. Smith, Jason Williams talking about who has the best handles of all time. And they're throwing God Sham God's name out. And he's like, I knew they were talking about me. My phone's blowing up. And I'm like, what world am I living in right now? Like,
the simulation's glitching.
It was crazy. And then Sham God ended up living above me when he was a grad assistant. So we knew each other so well, and like everything he did for the players, he would come up, my mom would make him coffee cake. Like, it was crazy. And we were playying at Baylor, and Pierre Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
This is we're in warmups. And Pierre comes over to our side of the floor, and I'm like, what is happening right here? Like, NIT tournament, 2013 or so. Yeah, 2013. And he's like, yo, you're God Sham God. And I'm like, what world are we living in right now? Like, this dude, we're about to play him, and he's coming over here asking for autographs. Something I had never seen before. Oh, it was crazy.
Crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah,
God Sham God, Providence legend. I
met God Sham God's doctor in Dallas, and I still talk to him. I coached his kid at camp, like this little kid.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, it's the funniest story ever, bro.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like, yo, you need to come out to the draft when, like, Luke, I forget who was getting drafted, but God Sham God invited them to the draft. He's like, yo, I need you to take my son there. I'll give you money, just drive him to New York City.
No way.
Swear to God, it was the craziest shit. He wanted me to drive his kid to meet God Sham God.
What are you doing, bro?
They were like, yo, you got to rent a car, bro. You got to do all this shit. I didn't even have it. I was in the – and they wanted me to drive to New York City and back that night.
And that's why you don't work in the Dallas Mavericks franchise right now. But, hey.
Right now, I'm fucking sick. Like, he's killing me, dude.
We kind of talked about it. There was a guy that kind of set up old players for off campus. So I see the car pulling. I'm like, oh, you know it's God Sham God, because the license plate it's a blue BMW 728. License plate just says God. I'm like, oh, no, what's he doing here? So this was the first day he moves in. He's like, I'm moving in downstairs. So I'm like, oh, God help us, right? Like, I think he's gonna be like a coach watching me in my this was my grad year, but I'm like, man, I'm so in trouble now. And then he just became the ultimate homie. Like, I'll never forget my first time going down. He had a whole room full of shoes. Like, he had hundreds of pairs of Under Armour, Adidas, Nike, everything. And like, he was obviously, he has a big name, right? And at the time, he started getting looks from Under Armour, I believe. So it was Puma and Under Armour. And I think his first year, he was getting dozens of shoe boxes. So
he was never home. So he'd always have me bringing all these packages. And all I'm thinking is like, man, I'm size 13, bro. Like, hook it up type of thing, you know? And like, we didn't do it because I'm like, I'm not going to lose my scholarship for like a pair of shoes. But afterwards, you know, I went down and rated that, like got my God Loves Harlem shirts and everything like that. Yeah, so he was great. But honestly, like the guy, the things he did for the team, right? So leading into – he got there maybe my junior or senior year. He really started to become more engaged with the team. And it was my senior year when, again, Chris was kind of coming back from injury. And, like, he was in the gym with these guys, Bryce Cotton, every single day. Like, he – the things he did for Bryce, I mean, you saw Bryce in his career. Like, yep. Champ God was integral and kind of how he got to Dallas. So like, yeah, going into my senior year every day, he's in the gym with Chris Bryce doing that. And like, you could see the progress through the summer. And in again, going into my senior year now, our team was like stacked. So my junior year, we lost Ricky Lito, Rhode Island guy, because he was ineligible, which sucked. Right. So Chris got hurt Chris came in, played a little bit. Ricky had to sit. Going into my senior year, we had Carson DeRozier from Wake Forest transferring, Tyler Harris coming from, where was he before that? His brother was Tennessee. He was Wolfpack, NC State, I think. So, but yeah. And then we had two kids. So Chris is coming back. Brandon Austin and Rodney Bullock were coming in. So like we had a solid roster of 10 guys, and I think it was like a top 25 recruiting class, right? Like Cooley was killing it. So first few games, I'm walking into the season thinking, you know, I had a good career, right? Like there's too much talent now. Ted, have fun, like work the guys out. And the way it kind of works is the beginning of the season, he tests the rookies, you know, he gives them some time to get them accustomed. But like, that's kind of the progression I anticipated just from being there. Like, you know, Ted, you had fun, you'll play a little bit, back to walk-on minutes, which a few times I said, coach, I don't want the walk-on minutes anymore. You know, like I thought I was too big time for that. I'm like, come on, like stop doing this to me. But then you realize like I could get 6 shots up in 2 minutes. Maybe I will take the, yeah. the
pressure-free shots at the end of the game. Exactly.
So going into senior year, like we were stacked and practice was super competitive. Like these dudes were going at each other's throat. And I think it was 4 games in, or maybe early December. I'd have to go back and look at my stats. I was probably playing maybe 1 every 2-3 games, like not much. 2 of the kids, Brandon Rodney, get suspended for like things outside of basketball, right? So we lose 2 guys. Then Chris goes down with an injury.
And you went into the season already missing Ricky. So that's like the whole roster essentially.
All of the guards are gone. Yeah. And I'm like, again, I'm supporting the team. Like I'd rather team first, but I just look at the roster and we just lost our 3 wings and guards. So now we got Bryce, LaDante, Josh Fortune, Tyler Carson. And then like, not to say we're 3 scrubs, but it was like me, Lee Goldsboro, and Brees Kofani, who if you put all our stats together, maybe added up to 6 points a game in 48 minutes or something. It was just like on 28% shooting. Like we're not really thriving here. Yeah. And I feel like I'm missing someone. Bryce at the 1, Josh, LaDante, Tyler, Carson, and Kadeem Batts.
Yeah. Yeah. He was still there.
Yeah. So we've got like a solid 6 and then 3 again, just, you'll never know what you're getting out of any of us type of guys. Mm-hmm. And like, as the season started, we were doing okay. Right. I was getting some run. I loved foul trouble games because that meant I got an opportunity. It killed my offensive ratings because I'd get a lot of switches on the offense defense. So end of the games, I go in, you know, probably foul or do something, go for the steal. But I mean, it got me in the games. It just, again, ruined my offensive points per game, which was a killer. But yeah, so we're kind of just going through the season and we're like, coming along, right? He had to adjust the way we played into a flex offense rather than run and gun. We got limited to like six guys. Bryce was playing every single game. We had guys, LaDante was playing every minute of every game as well. So like of the core six, there's nine of us, but like six of us are really playing. And what ended up happening, which is pretty crazy, is it started to work. Like when you only have a solid set of six guys or so that are really going to play and like, you know, hey, you're getting your shots, you're getting this, like you get so comfortable with each other that it is like crazy. And the other benefit they had there was the scout team. So my team in practice was stacked. Like Chris got healthy mid-year, but he didn't want to play because then he'd lose a redshirt year, and God forbid he got hurt. So like halfway through the year, our scout team practice was crazy. Like we would beat them almost 50% of the time. And like before the game, if they beat us, we walk into the game a little worried, like, oh man, they just used all their good shit today. Now, you know,
Was Ricky completely off the team, like not even practicing with you guys? Because he still got drafted after that year, right?
He was drafted I think the year before. So he was gone.
He was already gone then. Gotcha.
Yeah, so this was more like Brandon and them. Yeah. So it got super competitive, and we knew, again, I played LaDante. I'd always tell him, bro, I know what you're going to do before you do, right? I've guarded you every single day in practice for the last 3 years. And what ended up happening is he knew that I knew what he was going to do, and he would still find ways to make the shot. So like, I'll never even forget, he's on the baseline. I'm like, okay, hit me with the Hezzy turnaround fadeaway. Sure enough, he's doing it. Boom, Hezzy made it. And then he smacked me on the butt, and he's like, and you still can't stop it. I'm like, that's because I'm slow and like athletic type of shit. Like, you know, I got two bum knees.
He's 6'6", too. He's not tiny.
Like, you got 7'2" wingspan. Like, stop it.
Hunting was nice.
Yeah. So it was good, too, because, like, the chemistry is there. Everything's good. And ultimately, we get into kind of Big East play, and we're, like, borderline, right? So we're, like, very close NCAA tournament, NIT. I still had never made an NCAA tournament. So we made NIT the year before. But obviously, like, it would suck not go through your whole career without a tournament kind of experience. So big game, we're playing Seton Hall at home, and we're like maybe five games left in the season. We're on the bubble, like tracking the bubble. We're in, out, we're out, everything. Seton Hall, we're up by 3-4 minutes left. I forget why I was playing so much this game. Someone must have been hurt. I think, yeah, someone was out. But I remember I played probably 25, 30 minutes. Like, it was a lot for me. And playing pretty well. Everything's going well. So we're up like 9. Carson fouls 3 straight times, 90 feet from the basket. Offensive fouls. One was offensive. One's on a rebound. So they're coming down. They're making free throws. We're missing. It turns into like a 4-point game in the matter of seconds. Oof. So we're 4-point game, 2 minutes left. They hit a couple more threes. And now, you know, it's 9 seconds left. We have the ball underneath our hoop, up by 1. So coach calls timeout, draws up a play. And we're in the huddle. And again, I forget why I'm playing.
Was this the December game?
This was maybe. It was Seton Hall at home. It had to be February 2014.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. March 14th. So what is that? That's the week before the Big East tournament. I think it was our last game. And we knew we had to win that game and then one or two in the Big East tournament to be a guaranteed in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. So, boom. 1 second left. Coach draws up a play. I remember saying to him, Coach, I know the play you're doing. Put me at half court, me and Carson, right? Have Josh inbounds the ball, and you've got Bryce and LaDante. So, yeah, so Kadeem must have been out. And, again, Lee Goldsboro and Bryce, Breece, great guys. You're not putting them in to really do anything. So I'm playing, and coach decides Bryce is going to – this is the play. Bryce starts with the ball under the basket, runs the baseline. I step out of bounds. He passes it to me. I'm supposed to, again, run the baseline and find Bryce, who's got all this space to work with.
Okay.
Bryce steps, runs the baseline, passes it to me. They double him. Classic. So now I'm in the middle. I've got, mind you, already 2.5 seconds in.
Yeah. That 5 seconds doesn't restart when you pass it there.
Carson runs to the middle, 3-point line. But I'm like, do I throw it up in the air to him? F it. See LaDante running down the sideline. I'm like, all right, the way you pass it, you want to throw away so that if the defender tips it, it goes out of bounds versus if you throw it inside, they can steal it and then, you know, like get a layup. Defender tips it, fine. LaDante with that 7-foot wingspan hits his finger. Uh-oh. Turnover. They come in. I forget who the point guard was. I don't know. They score. We lose. So now you're looking at Ted Bancroft basically cost the team the NCAA tournament, right? I'm like, and at the time I was just starting to realize incentives and how coaches' bonus payouts were structured and like how this is their job, not like just a fun thing they do. And the next day, the coaches would not talk to me or Carson all practice. It was insane. We walked into practice dead last. We were so scared, like, everyone officially hates us. All the province hates us, right? It's been 6 years. They hate us. So we end up losing and we get reseeded. So we dropped a seed in the Big East. We get to the Big East tournament. Because we dropped the seed, I'm trying to think, DePaul was matching up with Villanova now. And we were no longer playing Villanova on that tier. DePaul upsets Villanova in the second round. So, yeah, so we end up dropping it. Seton Hall is now playing Villanova as the 8 seed. And we dropped out of maybe the 2 or 3 seed into the 4 seed. So now we're playing St. John's. Because Seton Hall beat us, they beat Villanova. They're on fire. And we always struggled historically against Villanova. We play similar games. They just have more often too much speed for us to handle. And again, obviously, they've won 2 natty championships. Unbelievable challenge, too. Yeah. Seton Hall is able to upset Villanova. And we beat St. John's at their place. Like New York, MSG, St. John's, always ultra-talented. We end up winning that. And now we're matching up again with Seton Hall in the semifinals now. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, I didn't get to play as much in this game. I don't know what. but
what changed, Coach?
I do remember we're up by maybe 3 or 4. Same position as last time. Oh, man. Coach subs me back in. And again, I'm trying to remember like the exact reason. I think we needed offensive rebound, or he trusted me in circumstances when he didn't trust others like that, even after what happened. So get the defensive rebound, and I'm dribbling it out, and I realize 2 guys are coming to foul me. Mind you, we're up by 4 with 1 minute left. So I call a timeout. Like, I'm getting the ball into Bryce's hands. I am definitely not doing this.
I'm not shooting these free throws. Yeah.
And for that, are you kidding me? To make it to the Big East championship, I know myself. I haven't gotten a shot up the whole game probably. Like, no, thank you. So I call the timeout. We get the ball in. Tyler Harris actually got the inbounds pass, and Tyler Harris could shoot free throws. You can always tell who really wants to score because they make all their free throws. Like, if you love to make points, you're like an 85, 95% free throw shooter. You're like, you'll do anything to get it. So, yeah. So he front ends the 1-1. They come down. I think that we stopped them. And then we ended up winning the game. But we go into the locker room and Coach Cooley's like, game ball goes to Teddy for calling the best timeout of his career. Like, and my other coach is like, you're such a little, we'll call it girl. He's like, shoot the free throws, right? Like, why else would you even play? I'm like, coach, I'm thinking bigger than just two here and there.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, warmed up Teddy's 80%, but we don't want to find out what cold Teddy in the biggest moment of his life shoots.
Yeah. Like, I think my basketball career in college was like 54% from the line. Yeah, no thank you.
Oh, man.
In my mind.
Yeah, that's tough, though. I mean, like you're saying, going in cold, not getting a ton of shots, sitting for 2 hours. Yeah.
And I'll jump ahead to a little bit, but my mom one time I almost had a double-double once, which was
my the Yale game, right?
Yep. I made like my first three free throws that game. And then, you know, you miss one and you start looking around, which is the worst thing you can do. You've got like 10,000 people staring at you. You miss a second one, it's game, set, match. You might as well just chalk it up. So I was one point short of a double-double. And after the game, my mom was just like, Teddy, you were so good at free throws in high school. What happened? There was 40 people in the gym, not 10,000. Quiet. Like, oh, my God. So back to the East tournament. We end up getting to the championship to play Creighton now. And during that game, we did something like, in kudos to Cooley. For the first time, we were a team. All they did, this was Doug McDermott, like, guy, when we played at their place 2 weeks earlier, he scored his 3,000th point right in Carson's face, like hit a three. He put up, he probably put up 40 against us that game. Just went absolutely crazy, and we got smacked. So we walk into this game, and like we have not even 6 hours to prepare. Our coach goes, we're going to play them in a zone. And your initial thing's like, what do you mean we're going to play them in a zone? They're the best three-point shooting team in the country. They're going to absolutely body us. Like, I think they were number 10 or something in the country just overall. And I'm like, you've got Doug who can score at will. You've got whoever else they have. Like, everyone can shoot the ball. So what ended up happening was he basically just tried to do what the Syracuse zone was. Like, run them off the three. No matter what, I don't want them shooting a single three. And it became an unbelievably competitive game. It was like, it was actually working. It was probably like 50-50, you know, like Bryce is scoring all our points, Bryce, Adante, Kadeem, like the six guys are doing their thing. And we're just shutting them down, the best shooting team in the country. And we get to the point, like last 3 minutes of the game, or it was probably the last 30 seconds at this point, and we're up by two, and LaDante is on the left side. Coach ran an ISO form, and I already know as soon as he gets the ball what he's going to do. Jab step, crossover, step back. I'm like, I've eaten this shot more times in practice than one can imagine. And it was – he ended up obviously hitting it, and we go on to win the championship. And right after, the Dante just came over, smiled. He's like, does that one look familiar? Get out of town. But it was one of those, man, he's practiced that shot 20,000 times. Like, that's how you become great. Yeah, and then the last thing, obviously winning the Big East Championship, we get to go to the NCAA tournament. And Carson and I, obviously at that point, we're all celebrating. So we're all going out drinking. Like, coaches don't care. They're in the – we're 21, like they're in the lobby drinking with their wives and family. We just walk right by, and before we go out, Carson goes, hey, Coach Blaney, the guy who really gave us a hard time about losing this first Seton Hall game, goes, without us blowing that game, we're not in the tournament, so you're welcome. Yeah, and then we ran out of there, but it was kind of like good to see it. I mean, finally, we didn't ruin Providence basketball career. Like, that would have been a real bummer to end my career blowing the game for something I waited 20 years for.
But yeah, no, that's crazy. What was your experience like with the first tournament?
You got to go, whoever's listening, go watch this game. Bryce Cotton went off. So we got seeded against UNC, and I'm not joking. We had them at the ringer. Bryce had 37, I think. I got a little bit of burn. There's actually a good photo of me online too, where it looks like I'm about to tip it in, but it was, I was fresh off the bench about maybe the last 35 seconds of the first half. Ball just hits the little rubber part of the backboard, bounces right over my hand, so I whiff on it. I'm like, that was the tip in. I could have, you know, at the buzzer, would have been unbelievable, scoring the tournament, but hits the rubber thing, bounces off. I swing and a miss. But yeah, so we're up, we're beating UNC by 5 or 6. And I'll never forget it. Tyler Harris is on a 1-on-3 fast break with a minute left, turns it over. They pass it out. They hit a 3. They get a steal. They get an and 1. Carson, I think, if you ask him, he says he boxed out, but I think it was him. Doesn't box out. They miss the free throw, get the rebound, score, and we lose. And we were, no joke, I think, if you watch like that percentage chance of winning thing ESPN does, it was probably like 93%. Then it was like 85, and then boom, you lose the game. And it was, I'm not joking. It's absolutely worth it. Bryce was insane. And like, if we won that game, I think we were playing Iowa State the next game. It was pretty good. But what Bryce did that game, if he had done that like 2-3 more times, he probably would have been drafted like one of those Hunter Henry guys that just tears it up in the tournament and then gets drafted. But yeah, Tyler Harris.
Yeah, he was fringe at that point for like draft prospects too. Like
exactly. Yeah. Like probably borderline second round. I mean, led the Big East in scoring. I forget how many games he played. He got a couple 10-day contracts, but just a note on him, he had a slow release is what they were saying. He changed his whole shot after college and still was an unbelievably good shooter. Like now in Australia, he's tearing it up, like 2 MVPs and everything. And his jumper is entirely different. He switched it, basically rebuilt it. And wow, still nice. So absolutely crazy. But he was just one of those, when you wake up, you do 500 push-ups at 5 in the morning, you know. And the hockey coach came to Providence, he said he was training his team and doing like boot camp. 2 in the morning, he goes in the gym with these guys. Bryce is already 2,000 shots deep or something. He was like, this was my first experience with this kid. And ultimately, it's like, that's the stuff that pays off.
That's wild. Yeah, that was a good UNC team too. There was Marcus Page, James Michael McAdoo. Johnson had a big game.
Yeah, and that's what the craziest thing was. Like what Bryce was doing was basically against an incredibly talented UNC team.
Yeah, those guys went on to win a title. I mean, those guys were tough, you know, like, so.
Yeah.
Joke, man. Wow. No, that's a crazy story too. You know, just to know, you know, about what great players do. I think a lot of people forget about that, man. It's like how dedicated they truly are when nobody's watching at all. It's like they're machines, man. That's a machine working.
It is. And like, that was the good thing about those guys too, is that it's contagious, right? You see a few of the guys doing that, and then it makes you want to do it more. And like, you see them progress in practice. I remember when Bryce was on the scout team with me, and like some days they put me in before him, right? Just because like I was shooting better. And then again, you fast forward 18 months, this guy was so disciplined. And again, I think I said this earlier, but he didn't get any college recruits really. When Keno called him out, he took a tour 2 days before school started and then just stayed here from Arizona. Like just stayed on campus, took the job, the thing, barely played. And then one day, I forget, we were scout team and he was Villanova, and he put up like 45. And that's when Keno was like, we should play this guy. Like, oh.
Yeah, definitely.
Turns out, yeah. And that was probably almost at the end of the freshman year. But then like you watch him progress into sophomore, junior, where he was started to really come out. And then senior year, it was Bryce's team.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did Godchimp God ever like lace him up and do some practicing with you guys? Did you ever jump in?
Shockingly, yes. Like, and it was mostly when, again, we had such a small team. It might've even been my grad year, but we were so down on guys. Like, there was times Sham would have to run scout team because when if Chris was guarding you, I could not, the only thing I could do was be back him down. Right. And even then he would take the ball. So like coach would have to tell Chris to relax. And then it got to the point, like we weren't even getting through a few practices when I think it was the Kiwi Gardner era, but coach just said, Sham God, you have to start lacing them up so that we have a point guard in practice. And it was like, so yeah, technically playing with God, Sham God, go figure.
did he take any ankles while he was out there?
Honestly, his handles, and if you look at him now, he's still with the mask, but like the guys, the handles will never leave. It is incredible to watch. Like he would do the drills with us and everything and like show you what to do and then dumb it down for us that weren't at the level of the Sham Gods and stuff like that. But yeah, so I mean, I was pumped to see when he signed with Dallas, like right after he actually signed a deal with Puma, became a sponsored athlete there. And even I called him when I was at Converse because he started with Under Armour. And then what was Luka Doncic? Under Armour coming out, maybe?
Was it Under Armour?
No. Who was the other? There was another. Who was the point guard before Luka for the Mavs? He could hoop a little bit.
I mean, there was Seth Curry. Who else is on the Mavs? JJ Barea.
Let me look it up. Yeah.
That would be 2018.
I feel like Harris.
Yeah, Devin Harris.
Yes, that's who it was.
Yeah.
But yeah. So anyways, yeah, Sham God was unbelievable. And then I think it was going into after my senior year, we lost him, I believe. So like we win the championship. He moves on to Dallas and like he still stayed with the team for the summer. And it actually could have been. No, it was a year Chris got drafted, so it was maybe even a year later. But, yeah, integral part of the team. And then, yeah, he's gone on to big things.
So he left before your PG year?
I think it was right after.
Right after PG year.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So then, my PG year is the other story. So we finished the season. We lose to UNC. Come back. And I, at the time, lived with all hockey guys. They lose in their state semis or NCAA tournament as well. And then they ended up winning the Natty next year with the same hockey team. But so now you've got six guys in a dorm who have been disciplined for 4 years of college. So the last 3 months, we had no more rules. And it was – you could tell there were no more rules. We were – absolutely every single day somebody was out drinking. Like we were finally students again for almost the first time, so it became a bloodbath, we'll call it. It was a fun time. What ends up happening is I know going everyone else is graduating, right? So I know though I'm staying and doing my gonna be a grad assistant on the team because at the time I was going into public accounting, which meant I needed to get almost a master's. So I talked to coach and they had put me on to be a grad assistant and I'd still support the team and get school paid for everything like that. Learn some of the coaching side, the film, everything. And he calls me in the middle of summer. I think I was actually at my internship at PwC and he's like, hey, I need you to come in today. Okay. I walk in. What's going on, coach? How are we doing? Like, is my job starting? And it's probably mid-June at this point. And he goes, no, Josh Fortune transferred this morning. I'm like, what does that mean? And he's, I'm going to need you to redshirt that freshman year you broke your leg and play this year. And I looked at him. I said, coach, I put on 25 pounds. In the last 2.5 months, like, I just look at me. At the time, I was weighing 200. I tapped out at 248 pounds. So again, when I went to college, I remember I looked up my freshman weight. I checked in at 184. So that was in whatever, November of freshman year. So I think probably 170, 175 when I got there. And now I'm leaving at 248. And I'm like, coach, you know what I'm going to have to do? And he was like, you got 3 months. Just switch to clear liquor. That was it. Don't stop drinking. Switch to clear liquor. I'm like, I can do that for you. Like, okay, fine.
Vodka crayons, Cape Codder is all summer.
Vodka Fresca. It was actually there's no calories in Fresca.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it got ugly. So it was like, I knew at that point, again, we had a good recruiting class come in. And it was more of a, hey, and he told me very transparently, I only need you to get us to the Big East, right? By the time we're in the Big East season, the rookie, the freshman, the sophomores, everyone's mature enough that you can pass the torch and like you can trust them to really play college level basketball. It just takes them some time. So I knew, okay, I can do that, right? So I ended up getting back in shape, which saved my life basically, because if not, I'd still be probably 250 pounds, but forced to get back into shape taught me, Teddy, if you ever stop working out, you're done. Like you got no chance. So built a lifelong habit, which is good. And that's when, again, coming back my grad year, I actually started to really get like disciplined towards not Bryce Cotton level, but I was like, all right, you know, I got another shot here, right? And I know I was happy with my college career. I think I could have done more. So I was like, you know what? I'll take this summer pretty seriously and work on the stuff. And no joke, the first, I think I even have the paper still. I led the Big East in 3-point field goal percentage for like the first month. I was 4 for 5 or 5 for my first 6. And until the minimums hit 20, it still said weekly, Ted Bancroft, Big East, like 3-point percentage, I was winning. So I was pumped about that. Yeah, it was kind of good. And then I think we were talking briefly about it, like career best game was against Yale. I keep forgetting why we always had people that were hurt. So
Providence had some tough luck while you were there.
Oh my God. Yeah. So we were playing Yale. And I got the start. So it was only the second start of my career. The first one was against UConn, which was good. We actually lost by like 1 or something. But yeah, I get the start and I'll never forget, like, you want to ease into the game a little bit. And I hit my first 3, which was huge. So like already I knew, okay, feel good. Then pretty quickly I got an offensive rebound and I actually shot it lefty because the kid fouled me out of bounds. So then made my first 2 free throws. I'm like, this is it. You're on fire, Teddy. Like you're finally competing. Dropping
30 tonight.
Exactly. Yeah. So just started chucking and obviously I can rebound. Like that was always a thing where just the sense of where the ball was going, probably not the most athletic, but like boxing out actually does work if you do it, just not everybody does it. So like the fundamentals and doing the right thing. So
yeah, I got high school center days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like how life comes full circle, right? Like,
yeah.
Posting up, yeah.
Like DeJuan Blair by your PG year.
Yeah. I'll tell you, that's how Anthony Davis became so successful. He just kept growing and I didn't.
You got half of the spurt at least, but so you're in the Yale game.
Yeah. And I can't remember. I actually think we lost because I remember thinking I started 2 games in my career and we lost both of them. That is the one thing I don't love, but yeah, for me, that was probably the one game where truly I felt comfortable out there. Like you always feel pretty good. And the more you play, the more you kind of can, you get more comfortable out there. But I just remember that game where I actually felt like, okay, you know, this is actually pretty easy, right? Like, why for the past whatever 2-3 years was I so tense, or just like that feeling of, okay, this is like everything's moving so fast. But yeah, it was that game. Oh, and we actually did win that game, which is good. But yeah, so 27 points. I went 2-for-4 from the field. And then there's the dreaded 4-for-7 from the free throw line. Stuck at 9 points, which would have gotten me into the double figures. And I missed just 3 straight. And yeah, that was, I know, classic.
Brutal. That's cool. I mean, hey, at least you got like that one moment where you really felt comfortable. Like, yeah, obviously I didn't really play a basketball career, but there was really only one game I felt comfortable in all of high school. So like, the fact you had that in Big East, like that's huge, man.
Yeah. And it's funny. And like, one of the things I wish I'd, as I look back, right, my coach always said, if you want the game to slow down, you got to get in like the best shape of your life. Right. Because if you're in peak conditioning, your heart rate slowing down, everything slowing down. And like, I committed to working out and did that, but with the workload I had and kind of the way the course structure was set up for accounting, I couldn't really commit to fully, like, I'm an Ironman trainer. And like, when you look at the summers, yes, I would go for a run every day and I would play pickup on Saturday, Sunday. But when you're working an internship from 8 to 5 every day and stuff like that, it, and like, you have to support yourself. That's where it's kind of like, yeah, you need the opportunity to not do any of that.
If yeah, you were at a PWC, right?
Yeah. So like PWC,
no mom and pop.
yeah. So like PWC, and then I'm at, I worked in a restaurant, which again, it's hard work, and, but you're working from 9 a.m. until 10, 11 p.m. It's hard to like maintain your skills. So then I always believe, like, by the time I got to season, man, these guys, they go home, they play basketball every single day forever, like across the league, you know, I'm already playing catch up. And then you add in the athleticism, which 2 bum knees, you're playing catch up again. You always feel like you were playing catch up. And then it was finally that game when I was like, okay, go figure. I didn't have to work this summer because I had this, you know, whatever, the grad assistant program, and then played. And like, then I finally got to get in the gym more and stuff like that. So it was nice. I do like to say though, I was glad. Most people would be pissed they're not playing more. I was always happy when I wasn't playing a lot, because it was more like, hey, could Ted Bancroft be on a national championship team? Yes. Could Ted Bancroft be one of the top 5 players on a national championship team? Absolutely not. So if you're counting on me to like provide this in and out, I'm not. You match me up with like any NBA player, right? You need NBA caliber players to win these national championships. And I'm like, I can do my best. I can cover off on 6 minutes a game without blowing everything up. But the fact that I was getting outplayed and we had other people stepping up, I'm like, all right, this I know is better for the team. And ultimately, yeah, I was just happy to be there. So like, yeah, it's fun to play, but shit, I'd rather see the team. That ring, I can tell my kids, we didn't have internet back there. I played every game, averaged 25. Whatever you want. You know, like, oh, they must have deleted the archives. Like, I don't know, but there's me holding the trophy out there, you know? So,
do you know the name Mark Titus?
Yeah, yeah.
Mark Sharp. Yeah, yeah. You have a similar kind of like career to him, like, and he's the same kind of way with it of like, you know, he's boys with like Mike Conley, Greg Oden. So he's like, yeah, like, I didn't want to play. I'm like, I'm totally like, you know, if I'm playing, there's a problem.
Yeah, exactly. And like, there were a few games we played at Butler, and like, I knew when it was a good opportunity for me to play. And we're at Butler. I think it was it actually could have been this grad year where we're down, and sometimes people just don't show up, right? Like, we're talking, yeah, it was my grad year. The team is flat. We're dead. And like, I haven't played in probably 3 games at this point, because again, we've got some more talent out there now. We get to the second half. Coach Cooley comes in. When the locker, when the what's that, Matt, the thing you draw on?
The whiteboard,
yeah. And he had them, they had magnetic ones versus a pen. So the magnets go everywhere. And he just goes, Ted, Pascal, LaDante, Chris, and there was one more. You guys are playing the rest of the game. So I'm like, that's not good for the team, right? Like, we're down, and I think I probably – I don't even know if I scored that game. I was chucking, too. I think I was, like, 0 for 4 or something. But what ended up happening was, like, we just committed to playing defense. So he put me in, and we're down probably 15. Nobody's doing anything. But I knew, like, hey, if we get it done on defense, the scoring will come. We've got Chris. We've got LaDante. We've got guys that can take over this game. And it doesn't have to be me. So it was me, Pascal, and again, there was one play coach put on repeat where the ball, they're coming up the floor and the kid kind of pauses and I'm running from behind and I dive, hit the ball to Chris. Chris goes in and scores. And from that moment forward in the second half, like, we ended up dominating the whole second half. And yeah, and those are the games where I knew, like, okay, some of them you just got to, like, chop it out and do your best you can, right? Like, an ugly win's a win. And Coach Cooley would always say, we win ugly. And that was, like, one of the games where, hey, you know, I didn't even score, I don't think. But I was able to go in and just say, nobody else is really showing up. You know what I can do? Play hard. And then I got, I think, food poisoning and missed practice the next 3 days. But, like, it was one of those things where – those are the games that I appreciated the most. And, like, it was always, hey, put, you need the energy. You need someone to, like, go in and just remind these guys that when they see me step on the floor, they're like, we're really doing something wrong. Like, if coach got to the point of, you know, we're all out of the game, and then to watch how hard we play, it's like a reminder to them of, hey, Cooley doesn't care if you're – he doesn't care who you are. He will take you out if you're not given max effort. So, like, that's the times when I was like, yeah, I helped win that game, like, by not even scoring, but just, like, playing hard and playing good defense, stuff like that. So those are the games that when I look back, I'm like, yeah, my stats, I'm happy I scored a few college points, but I know, like, they always say the glue guy. We had a couple of glue guys, but, like, that's a real thing where you just keep the team together and push people. Like,
yeah, even in practices.
Yeah, and I used to get in trouble because I'd talk so much trash and just, like, get these guys riled up. Like, oh, you want to play in the NBA? And I remember coach made me stop one time. I'm like, you want to play in the NBA? Tell me why I got more shots up today than you. Like, what are you doing? Like, I just beat you in a sprint. Get out off the court. You know, and just, like, you really care about this. This is your life, and you're letting me beat you. I'm like, I went out drinking yesterday. Like, get out of, you know, like, it's a Saturday morning practice, and I'm working harder than you. Like, get out of here type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're real humble about your career. I think you had a really awesome one. And, like, you obviously kind of took that, like, mentorship, kind of like the uncle on the team role towards the end of your career,
Yeah. Which
is really cool. But, like, I look at those, like, those two knee injuries, and it's like, damn, like, what if you got comfortable that sophomore year? Like, kind of thing, like, what could have happened kind of thing. It's really cool that, like, yeah, you know, you kind of took on that role and, like, embraced it. And you still made the most out of that career thing and you know, like, help some guys, like, stay on their path too.
with
being, like, the big brother on the team and people kind of respecting you, being like, oh yeah, like, he's been here, he knows the way around campus, he's got the injuries, he's got the t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, if this kid's working hard, I can probably work hard.
Exactly. And, like, to your point, my freshman year, Mal Brown, I put up, like, 19 points in a scrimmage. So, like, when I do reflect, I remember that game vividly because it was, like, again, in front of a smaller crowd. It's only 3,000 people. But I'm like, I do know I had what it took, I believe. You know, like, I'll never really know because when you dislocate your kneecap, I could never even – I started shooting everything off the left foot and, like, just so scared. So, I mean, what I
– No more windmill between the legs?
nothing. I'm happy to dunk without hurting myself now, you know, like,
right.
But the one thing, and I like will always say that my mindset just shifted because I was like, Teddy, this is your fault, right? When you were a kid, you always would dream, I want to play for BC basketball. And that's all you said. You should have said, I want to play an average 25 of a game for BC basketball. You know, like, yeah. You hit your dream, you just didn't dream big enough.
Still a hell of a lot farther than a lot of people do. And like, you know that level of talent too. Like like I said, you're humble. Like, you were a really, really good basketball player just to even be on those teams and be at that level. But the difference between the 1% of basketball players, which is like Division I, and then the 0.1% of basketball players, which is NBA, is still a crazy leap.
It's out of control. And like, then to even get, and like Chris, he's been plagued by injuries, but like, I'm telling you, this guy could win any single athletic event. He got recruited to play D1 football. Like, he just didn't like it because his hands would get cold during football.
Relatable.
Yeah. So, but then like, to even see when I'm like, oh, he was top five, or he was number five pick, but I'm like, he's going to be an all-star. And then I see what happens when he gets to the next level.
Yeah. And I'm crazy.
Oh my goodness. I can't even imagine. Like, and when you watch how slow the guys look like they're moving, but in reality, it's just like, they're so in control and everything. It's like, night and day.
Yeah, we had a coach, you remember Adam Rogers, Coach Rogers?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
He used to roast us in high school because, you know, obviously Brian Scalabrine, we'd all be making fun of him on the Celtics. He'd be like, dude, if Brian Scalabrine came to this gym, he would blow the doors off of every one of you. He would be the fastest dude you've ever seen in your life.
I know, yeah. Did you see that? The Scal video of him doing that?
Oh, yeah. Just crushing people in one-on-one. Correct. Yeah.
That's unreal.
It's a whole nother level. But that, you know, what you mentioned that I really liked, man, was the believing more, that there is more, even if it doesn't happen. The fact that, you know, you can start to believe those things, you know, it's, you don't necessarily need to fit it into somebody else's mold, because I'm sure, like, because we've all heard it, like, don't dream too big, man. You know, we've all heard that shit.
Yeah, I mean, Teddy's high school coach told him he couldn't. And, like, I just won conference player of the year practically. Damn.
Yeah. It is funny too, even. Like, now that I'm like and you're a father, so you probably will start seeing it. But like, I was talking to my mom the other day, and my nephew found the book of like when I was in college, and he was like, that's Teddy. And my mom's like, do you know what Teddy had to do to get there? And he was like, what? And she would just tell him every day before school, mind you, I'm 6 through 15 years old, Teddy would go outside instead of playing, watching TV or anything. And for 30 or 45 minutes every day, he would just shoot hoops. And then he'd come home and he'd go right back outside to play basketball. And like, man, you think when you're in high school and college is when like you build the skills, but it was like, man, I'm just thankful that when I was 10 years old, I hated being late for anything. So my mom would be like, wait for me outside. And I'd just be out there for hours. And I was like, it's funny when you see the perspective from like a parent of like, that's why Teddy was able to get there, because he just loved it when he was so young, that all he did. And like, you hear it, like when Kobe said he loved it, he knew it forever. Like, man, I wish working in, you know, a personal career in business world wasn't like priority shifted. And I, you know, had kept that same dream, but it's funny. And just like, when you can see it in kids that are still 20 to 22, I'm like, I'm pretty envious, where I'm like, Bryce at 4 in the morning, like doing 500 pushups when you wake up at 6 in the morning is banana land to me. Even I never got to that point, but it's like, to keep that passion and just hope, like, never stop it's unreal.
Wow. Yeah. And like Andy was alluding to, like, you know, not listening to anybody saying that you couldn't, like, even before, you know, your high school coach, when you were, before you had your growth spurt and were getting recruited by people, you know, you were 5'7". Like you said, you were a really late bloomer, late grower. Like, when you were there 10 years old shooting, no one would have said, oh yeah, he's going to play for PC one day. It's like, no, but it only takes is you to believe everyone. Honestly, kind of take that.
Yeah. And just, yeah. kind of like blind faith. Do I look back? Would I make the same choice? You know, if I didn't, I don't know. Like, I think I just got lucky. And also the fact, you know, my mom, she just like pushed me to say, you've always wanted to go to Providence. Are you ready now after all that to quit and like settle? And I was like, you're right. Like, it's either PC or bust. And again, I look back to the day I tried out and just am so thankful that I made my all my threes. Like, that was it. Like, that, it's just one 30 minute session that changed my whole life is like, man, yeah.
Crazy. That's incredible. And actually, so we had Jordan on a few episodes prior to yours, and he was on that AAU team, and everyone kind of who has listened to Jordan's episode and knows Jordan Resendiz knows dude's a bucket, like an absolute machine of a score.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know you from an even younger age, but we played with Jordan on the AAU team together at Crossover.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, it was, I mean, even with a great scorer like Jordan on that team, a lot of our offense was running through you or Dave Curtis in the post.
Yeah.
And you guys were getting buckets. That was my realization of like, oh, Teddy's a lot better than he was a few years ago was when we played on that AAU team.
I love that team. Our coach got in a fight with one of the players the first day, and then we got a new coach. I'm like, what did I just sign up for?
So that was the first day, and then the last day of that team existing was someone punching out a window at Mass Premier.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. I don't know. Were you still on it at that point?
I don't know. I just remember. I forget what happened with it. Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was because people stopped paying the dues to play or.
It was a little bit of both, I think, but we got banned as a team. We got banned AU-wise because he who must not be named punched out a Mass Premier window.
Remember that.
Yeah, no, that was a lot of fun, and I think that, like, kind of speaks volumes to how much of a scorer. Like, obviously you didn't score a ton in college, but you could get a bucket. Like, if you were getting buckets with J-Rez, you could get a bucket. So just to bring it back to, like, college in that last year there, were you going for your, like, CPA and stuff too at the time when you were – PGN?
So, yeah, so that was, I mean, that part was awful, right? And at the time, one of the things I was fortunate with was, like, I networked pretty well in college. So I always, again, trusted my parents. They both did the CPA route. So I started, and my mom one day, I was like, I've got some opportunities to probably go work in hedge funds in New York. And I actually got an offer to go work for, you ever seen Entourage?
Mm-hmm.
You know Ari Gold?
Yeah.
There's a guy named Ari Emanuel who it's based off of. And I actually was going to be almost like an assistant to him down in New York. But it was an internship and it only paid like $25 an hour. And I couldn't afford to live in New York there. So I was
$25 an hour.
And I passed up my PwC internship. So eventually I said no. But again, so I went to do my CPA and the joke was always, I had to do my CPA to get out of accounting. Like I knew at this point I wanted to get into finance, but, it was just like a long path. So I literally was studying every day knowing I have to do this. I have to go work at PwC for a few years, pass the CPA, get my MBA. And I quit. I didn't even finish my MBA the first time. Cause I was doing the CPA. By the time I finished basketball, the CPA, I just wanted to start working and basically just like be done. So yeah, that grad year was like I had night classes. We'd practice at 1 to 4. So I'd go to the library at like 9 to noon, study for the CPA, go to practice, and then I'd have class from 7 to 9:30 at night. Damn. So like, yeah, the grad year ended up to be a huge grind, which wasn't ideal. And truthfully, if I'd done more in the summer, it would have been better. But it's the summer, and I'm like,
and you had to get back in shape. So
yeah, there's a lot going on. Yeah. So I mean, it took me forever. And then like, just from a professional standpoint, by the time I did that, I quit on my MBA program halfway through. And it wasn't until like 3 years later, I was like, oh, you know what I should have done? Finished my MBA. And I had, yeah, drove back and forth from Boston to that, which was even worse. But yeah, it's just life's a roller coaster, right?
So, yeah, totally. It's too bad you didn't have a remote learning for when for Providence instead of Boston Providence every day.
I know.
But so how did that lead to Converse? Because you didn't end up doing like accounting stuff at Converse, right?
So I went so I did 2 years at PwC and honestly went to Converse because I got the LinkedIn, whatever, someone hit me up and poached me. And, you know, I didn't initially have a ton of interest until my girlfriend at the time told me Nike owned Converse. Mm. So I was like, oh, shit. OK, yeah. Respond and say I'm interested. And I was actually in Europe at the time using my PwC company phone, roaming, like no worries, everything. Came back and was like, why would I do, like, do I want to even go on this interview? Why did I sign up for this, regretting it? Go on the interview unprepared just to like practice, see what it is. I met the woman who basically coolly changed my life. And this woman's probably up there, but she was the, like a former CFO of Nike China, whose husband got cancer. So she moved over here and she just took a job to get better healthcare for her husband. And as I'm in the interview, I'm like, holy smokes. Okay. Did not know that. That's pretty cool. And then she pulls up, it was actually me on her phone playing basketball. And she was like, is this you? And I'm like, yeah, that's me. And she was like, yeah. And she's kind of like, why do you want this job? Like, this is a step back from what you're doing. And I told her, well, you know, I love Nike as a brand. Converse, I'm indifferent on. And she's like a Nike person. So yeah, she was on my team. And I was like, you know, ultimately I want to be a CFO. So I did accounting to get into a potential finance role. And she was like, I also was in controlling. She also started in public accounting and went over to the finance side. And she was like, if you come work with me, I'll help you kind of follow up with, get you in finance. And the joke was almost the old Converse controller doesn't even acknowledge I was in controlling or in accounting because I was in and out so quickly. So I think I made it less than a year in my accounting job before they put me in the finance role, which ultimately is what I wanted to get into. And then, did about 3.5 years in that before it was moved to Portland, Oregon, which I wasn't fully ready for. I know it's not, the campus is unbelievable. If you ever watch Drake's Life is Good music video, that's basically like, it's incredible.
So Converse's headquarters was moving to Nike's headquarters over there?
No, just in terms of career progression, it was.
Oh, gotcha.
It's time to go to Nike, Ted, if you're serious about this. Yeah. So, I mean, with pandemic and everything, yeah. I felt like I'll probably stay in Boston for at least a few more years and then, you know, see what happens. You know, you can always go back. And like, I missed the discount for sure. The Nike discount was pretty huge, but on my way out, I basically spent all my money on Nike products just because it's, imagine buying shoes full price. I can't even fathom it anymore.
That's why I go to Marshall's. Yeah. Clearance rack, baby. It's, I got some Kobe's for like $40.
Yeah, exactly.
That's too funny though, how you say like, Converse wasn't really on your radar when you found out Nike owned them. I'm just picturing like Larry Bird and Magic Johnson with their Converse weapons, just like, oh.
Well, so it's funny.
How times change.
You'll have to probably cut this out. They probably don't care. But so I get there, and because of my role in accounting, I got handed down all the contracts. So like I went through and someone had definitely taken the Dr. J contract, like the official Dr. J signed one. But the one I did find was God Shamgar. I'm like, because he was an initial out of school Converse. And that's where, like, again, there was a shirt that's like Star Chevron. It says God loves Harlem and like everything. And I called Sham. I'm like, Sham, you'll never believe what I just found. It was your initial contract with Converse. And I asked around, there's people been there like 50 years. And one of the guys, Don Craig, was like, I remember Shamgar. And he goes, That guy got more comp product for his friends and family than anyone. We had to shut him off. And I'm thinking back to the days of when I'm living above him and there's product coming through the doors every day. You want something? Yeah, I'll get, I got you. And I'm like, oh, no shit. His time at Commerce, they cut him off. And it was like baked in the contract. You get $10,000 worth of comp product or something. Like, oh, it's too funny.
That's wild. That's too funny. No, that's a good one to go full circle on too. We can kind of wrap it up there if you want. Do you have anything you want to plug? Anything coming up or any like social media that people can follow along on what you're up to? Nah,
I don't actually have social media.
Yeah.
I'm like, I forget what I watched, but I watched something and thought, man, I got to get off social media. Like this is, but I did get on TikTok because, the Commerce GM for my digital team was like, Commerce has a great presence on TikTok. Uh-huh. Once you put me on that, I swear I'd never be a TikTok person. I'm all in on it. I could teach you how to cook anything. I haven't done any of them, but like the food hacks are unbelievable.
Absolutely. That's awesome. No, that's too cool. Do you want to drop your TikTok or do you know?
I don't even know my name. I don't follow. Yeah.
That's cool. Appreciate that. Yeah. Cool. Well, no, I guess
the only thing I'd say is for anyone, reach out on LinkedIn if like anyone's looking to pursue Commerce, Nike, or anything like finance related. I know the struggle. One thing I'll say, last thing, my mom talks like I do. Like we can talk for days if you can't tell based on the podcast. And one time, my mom, before I knew Shamgod a little bit just from him being on the team, but like my mom watched him live, like growing up, like she was a Providence diehard, like went to the games and like the blizzard of, yeah, like she walked during the blizzard of maybe 82 or something. Like my uncle went to the Final Four, like they'd fly, they did everything. And first time she met him, I saw her introduced and I was like very happy. Then I saw her talking to him 25 minutes later and I walked over knowing my mom won't stop talking. And I'm like, Mom, how long have you been talking to him? She's like, oh my God, I know. I'm sorry. You can go. And he was like, no, not, I don't mind at all. And I was just remember thinking like, talk about a guy's character. He met this woman who just, he would talk to for 25 minutes about probably, I mean, maybe his glory days, maybe he was
coffee
just
cake.
Yeah, that's why the coffee cake came later. Like, but yeah, even that guy, just his character is unbelievable. Awesome. Well, hey, nice seeing you. Andy, nice meeting you.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, man, thanks so much.
I'll keep you posted on when we're up there.
Absolutely.
Thanks a ton for coming on, man.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Have a good night. Have fun, man.